Description of mystic yoga perfections. Text number 14. Mahatyatmani Hasutre
Mahatyatmani Hasutre
Dharyan Hai Manasam
Dharyan Hai Manasam
Parikamyam Paramesyam He
Parikamyam
Vindate Yakta Janmana
Vindate Yakta Janmana
Mahatyatmani Yasutre
Mahatyatmani Yasutre
Dharyan Hai Manasam
Dharyan Hai Manasam
Parikamyam Paramesyam He
Parikamyam Paramesyam He
Vindate Yakta Janmana
Vindate Yakta Janmana
Mahatyatmani Yasutre
Mahatyatmani Yasutre
Dharyan Hai Manasam
Dharyan Hai Manasam
Parikamyam Paramesyam He
Parikamyam Paramesyam He
Vindate Yakta Janmana
Vindate Yakta Janmana
Mahatti
Mahatti
In the Mahattattva
In the Mahattattva
Atmani,
Atmani
in the super soul.
In the super soul.
Yaha,
Yaha
one who.
Sutre,
Sutre characterized by the chain of fruitive activities.
Dharyat,
should concentrate.
Mayi,
in me.
In me.
Manasam,
Manasam.
The mental activities.
Prakamyam.
The mystic perfection called Prakamya.
Paramesyam.
Most excellent.
Me.
From me.
Vindate.
Obtains or enjoys.
Abhyakta janmanah.
From him. Whose appearance in this world cannot be materially perceived. Translation. One who concentrates all mental activities in me as the supersoul of that phase of the Mahatattva which manifests the chain of fruitive activities obtains from me whose appearance is beyond material conception beyond material perception, the most excellent mystic perfection called Prakamya. Purport. Srila Viraghava Acharya explains that the word sutra or thread is used to indicate that the Mahatattva sustains one's fruitive activities just as a thread sustains a row of jewels. Thus, by fixed meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the soul of the Mahatattva, one can achieve the most excellent perfection called Prakamya. Avyakta Janmanaha indicates that the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears from the Avyakta or the spiritual sky, or that his birth is Avyakta, beyond the perception of material senses. Unless one accepts the transcendental form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no possibility of obtaining Prakamya or any other genuine mystic perfection. Omagyan Vinandusha Jinandina Salakaya Chakshuram Vinandina Tasma Sri Guru. So this verse here is describing that one who concentrates all the mental activities in me as the super soul of that phase of the Mahatattva, which manifests the chain of fruitive activities, obtains that mystic perfection called Prakamya. So here we see that the yogis, after perfecting the process which Krishna has described in the previous chapter of sitting in a fixed posture with the eyes half closed, looking at the tip of the nose, and you know, the body, the neck, head, you know, in a straight line, practicing the breathing, pranayama, raising the life airs through the chakras like this, and then by those mechanical bodily exercises and breathing exercises, one is able to then still the mind and the senses, and allows one to look inwards and to concentrate with all one's attention with no distraction. And then according to one's meditation upon the super soul in his and his various opulences or potencies, one is able to then draw upon certain mystic cities. So although it sounds very technical, very you know, sophisticated, very, very difficult, if you look at the overall picture from the devotee's perspective, it is really the simple activity of focusing on bodily activities. So for you know, for the non-devotees, of course, these activities and the results appear very, very wonderful, and they're in great awe. So look at the yogis as the best among elevated personalities. Very wonderful, very, very elevated. The devotees, because they understand that these karmis, jnanis, or yogis actually meditating, are actually performing activities centered around the body, that at best they're a little more elevated than the animals. That is the devotee's perspective. As we, in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes that one who sees the body as the self identifies with the body to some degree or another, then they're considered to be no better than the cow or the ass. So they're actually considered to be on the animal platform. Of course, the karmis, you know, the karma yogis and the jnanis and the astanga yogis, they're a little more advanced. But still, because basically the activities and the results of those activities pertain to the body and enjoyment of the body, or the subtle body, the mind, they're just a little elevated from the platform of animal life. So This is, I was listening to a lecture last night. Srila Prabhupada was making that exact statement. He was speaking on the verse from the Bhagavad Gita, Dehina Shunyata Dehe Kumanam Yuvaram Jara Tata Dehantara Prapti Dhiras Tatrana Bhavite. That the very first instruction that Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita is that we're not this body. So that very first essential instruction by Krishna to Arjuna, if one understands that, even at that point, one becomes more elevated than the karmis, the jnanis, and the yogis. As we know in the sixth chapter, Krishna says that one who always meditates upon me with great faith and devotion, then certainly that person is the best of all yogis. But actually, even from the very beginning, even before that, a devotee accepting even the beginning instructions of Krishna, even before that realization, they're actually considered to be better than those in the bodily concept of life. So even the beginning understanding of the devotee that I'm not this body, therefore why involve myself in the processes of Kama Yoga, Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga, which are all based upon bodily activities. Therefore, if I'm not the body but I'm the spirit soul, and my activities, the activities of the spirit soul, which is service to the Supreme Lord, then that's the activity I should take up. So even that beginning realization puts them hundreds and hundreds of births in front of the kami, jnanis and the yogis, like this. Even that beginning realization, what to speak of, as devotees make further progress and take up the process of devotional service. And by the process of devotional service, they draw the attention of the Supreme Lord and gradually also understand the nature of the Supreme Lord and the nature of devotional service. So they're very, 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 very elevated. So here, for instance, this Prakamya Siddhi. Prakamya Siddhi is, it gives one the ability to enjoy material objects. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his comments, he remarks that the yogi can enjoy objects, material objects, which one may have heard about but hasn't seen. So someone may be thinking that I will hide something, so it's just for my personal enjoyment. I'll hide some treasure or something like this, and it cannot be seen by anyone. But the yogi, by this siddhi, they can, if they hear about it, then they can enjoy it. Even though they can't see where it is. There's also another aspect to this city, of course, is that the yogi, Srila Prabhupada describes it in one sense as magic, that the yogi can perform wonderful sort of magical type feats within the laws of nature, but they're still magical, and he gives the example in the Nectar Devotion, just like A yogi may be able to draw water within their eyes and then make that water come out their eyes. Okay. Whereas the last siddhi, kamya, the siddha, something like that, that one there, it is similar, but the yogi can actually do things which contradict the laws of nature. Make water burn like fire, like that actually contradicts. So in this sense, even though the water is entering within the eyes, it's still retaining the laws of nature, that is water, what have you. So so it's certainly a very wonderful mystic city, but if you look at it, it is something which is enjoyed by those who, to one degree or another, are on the bodily platform of life. So this of course is the the difference between the Krishna consciousness movement and all the other so-called Karmis, Gyanis, Yogis, philosophers. This movement is a very serious and authorized movement that gives people the real information that you're not this body. Don't waste your time uselessly. In all the processes that deal with the bodily concept of life, or even just negating the bodily concept of life, as if that in itself is perfection, as the Gyanis do. Don't waste your time with those activities and the benefits gained from those activities. The Karma Yogis, because Srila Prabhupada describes their first class enjoyers of the material world. And in order to get that first class enjoyment of the material world, they aspire to go to the heavenly planets. So they can go to the moon planet and different heavenly planets, and they can enjoy material delights for thousands and thousands of years. That is their goal. The Gyanis, again, they're trying to negate the difficulties of material existence and attain a peaceful situation beyond birth and death, beyond cycle of birth and death, old age, disease, beyond the afflictions of the three modes of material nature. But it's really just a negative side of the bodily concept of life. They're trying to negate the difficulties of the bodily existence, but have no real concept of the spiritual positive alternative. And here we see even the mystic yogis, they are trying to, through bodily activities, to acquire different mystic perfections which they can ultimately enjoy, certain powers that enable them to manipulate the material world. So to one degree or another, they're wasting their time in bodily activities, even though they're not the body, and the goals that they are trying to get are all based around, to one degree or another, the bodily existence. So if one is not the body, then why waste that time? In order to be happy, whether it is the same principle in any of those different processes. If someone is trying to, for instance, on a very simple level in Kali Yuga, the average person just trying to enjoy their senses, many of them are really on the animal platform of life, and they just want to be happy by eating, so they want to enjoy the tongue, they want to, you know, see beautiful, you know, objects, they want to, you know, hear beautiful sounds and enjoy the sense of touch. In this way, just, you know, gross sense gratification, trying to be happy on the bodily platform of life. But of course, there's no happiness there to be found. Perhaps a little drop. Tiny little drop of happiness in the material world, just like a little drop of water that, you know, one may taste in the desert. But that little drop of water that one may taste in the desert, a little drop falls out of the sky, falls on your tongue, all it does is just aggravate the situation. It just, you know, it gives you not enough to enjoy, but enough to make you crave more. It's like the story of the Brahmana who was very hungry, and he was all day trying to collect alms to get something to eat, and just couldn't acquire something to eat that day. And somehow the hunger got the better of him, and this Muslim said, I can give you a meal. And the Brahmana thought, I'm so hungry, I will eat. So he gave him a meal, and he said, but it has, you know, there's some meat in this meal. And the Brahmana said, you know, because of my hunger, I will eat. So he ate. It was just a small portion. And he said, yes, I'll have more. And the Muslim said, well, sorry, that is all I have. So the Brahmana thought, so now I'm still hungry, but I've lost my caste. So that's the position of happiness in the material world. Is that, yes, there may be a tiny little bit, no one can deny that. It's not enough to make you happy. You lose your whole spiritual situation, and there's really no gain. So yes, we agree. If people say you can't say there's no happiness in the material world, we say yes, okay, we will agree. There's some happiness, but that's the extent of that. So the happiness is there. On the material platform, but it is just a tiny drop. So all of these, the karmis, the jnanis, the yogis, on that platform, very simple platform, as the average person is doing, in one sense, the yogis and the jnanis and the karma yogis, for all their sophistication in their processes, and they're all their claims to be very, very elevated, they're actually just a couple of steps in front of the average person engaged in sense gratification on the bodily platform. They're just a little bit in front. Because they haven't fully realized Krishna's first instruction of the Bhagavad Gita, that you're not this body. And if you're not that body, why engage in activities centered around the body to bring happiness? Whatever type of yoga, whatever type of process you may call it, it's still the same activity that you are acting for happiness related to the body. So, you know, certainly there's some realizations and there's some progress, you know, that is admitted by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, but we shouldn't overestimate the position of the karmis, jnanis and yogis. They're not that much further ahead, and because they haven't pulled up that anchor of the bodily conception of life, it's still very, very prominent within the heart. Even though they've made some advancement, there is a huge danger that they will again come back to that platform, because they haven't really escaped that bodily concept of life. It's still, Maya has still got her grips in them, even though they're thinking, oh, I am so, so very advanced. They cannot understand the Bhagavad Gita. Many of these so-called very elevated personalities have commented on the Bhagavad Gita. And what to speak of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's described here, his birth is avyakta, beyond the perception of the material senses. So they're still on the platform, to one degree or another, of perception through the material senses. They cannot perceive the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond the perception of the material senses, and they're struggling just to fully appreciate their own spiritual nature. So you see, for instance, like Gandhi, who is considered to be in many places, people will associate the Gita with Gandhi. That if you want to understand the Gita, you understand Gandhi's commentary. That's it. But if you look, his whole outlook on life and presentation, even within the Bhagavad Gita, is that I'm an Indian. Right? I am Indian, and I need independence for my country. We recited that sloka from the 10th canto, chapter 84, text number 13. One who considers, identifies himself with the body or their place of birth, they're no better than the animals. So here, he hasn't understood the very first instructions of the Bhagavad Gita. And people, but thousands of people, millions, they're looking at you. Want to, he is a great, saintly person, very, very elevated. But not much better than, the average person who's still on the animal platform. It hasn't really gone a long way when you look at it from the perspective of the devotee. In fact, he actually said that, I don't believe that such a person as Krishna ever actually existed. He said that. Prabhupada quotes that quite often. We quite often associate him with the Rambak and this and that, what have you. But his realizations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are very, very much deficient. And you look at all of them. I think it was might have been Dr. Radhakrishna. Again, their understanding of the Bhagavad Gita is very, very deficient. They are saying that any path you take. So I think it was Dr. Radhakrishna who. Or might have been Ramakrishna, one of them, who actually became self-realized or God-realized by worshipping Kali. Which one was that? Ramakrishna. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the one who worships the demigods is less intelligent. A Buddha, they have no intelligence. And he's saying that I have become self-realizing God-realization by the process of lack of intelligence. and people have fallen, yes, I will also have no intelligence. And I will also become God realized like you. The Buddhists, they also say that there is no God. Ultimately, everything is a void. And Srila Madhvacharya says, yes, there is a void. The only place I can find a void is within the mind and the intelligence of the Buddhist. Apart from that, there is no void within the creation of God. So, if you... they speak volumes of philosophy, and the masses of people, what is the mentality of the masses of people? These so-called scholars, leaders, philosophers, yogis, they're lacking even the basic understanding to understand Bhagavad Gita. So what is their intelligence? What is their position? And all the so-called followers, all the hordes of wannabe yogis and philosophers and what have you, they're saying your intelligence is thousands of times greater than mine. So what is my position? So the leaders are blind, and they're saying, and you see so much more than I do. So what is their position? So these teachings of Lord Krishna, they're very, very difficult to understand. If you act, it's very, very difficult, because it cannot be understood while one is on the bodily platform of life. But Krishna is so kind, especially in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that even though the Supreme Lord is actually beyond the perception of our senses, if we engage ourselves in the service of the Lord, then He reveals Himself to that devotee. And He gives the process that God realization, self realization, actually begins with the tongue. That the tongue has two functions, and if we engage those two functions in the service of the Lord, then the Supreme Lord actually reveals Himself to the devotee. So the two functions of the tongue, of course, is the tongue tastes, eating. So as we see, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura and the Acharyas, they have recommended that controlling the mind and the senses and coming to the platform of Krishna consciousness, spiritual platform, begins with the tongue by eating foodstuffs which are offered to Krishna. And also to the tongue vibrate sound, by engaging this tongue in the service of the Lord, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In that mantra, we're praying, Dear Lord Krishna, O energy of the Lord, especially Srimati Radharani, the topmost manifestation of the Lord's energy, the full potency, please engage me in the service of you both. Let me engage in the service of Sri Sri Radha Krishna. By engaging the tongue like that, automatically all of the senses become controlled. If you analytically look at the chain of sense gratification, here we described here sutra referring to the Mahatattva, but there is a a chain of fruitive activities. A chain of fruitive activities suggests, you know, there's one link that leads to the next link. So it all begins with the tongue, the link of sense gratification, and that will link you up with the next stage of illusion and sense enjoyment. And gradually, if you follow the activities from the tongue through the senses, gradually one becomes totally implicated in material life to the point where one has a huge expansion of activities, family, children, home, mortgage, job, this, that and the other. You know, huge amount of activities, and deeply immersed in the illusion and the activity and the thoughts and the meditation on all those material objects of sense gratification. But if you trace it back, it began with the tongue, and then, you know, one thing led to the other gradually. You know, once the illusion leads from the tongue to the genitals, the sex life, of course, that's where the illusion of material existence, you know, the knot of ignorance and illusion is tied really tightly within the heart and expands unlimitedly like that. So it is a chain, and that chain means one is, you know, bound, tied up. So there's no question of happiness. Another, we can take the chain of fruitive activities in another way. The one is actually tied up by that chain of fruitive activities, just like sometimes someone may kidnap someone, either a terrorist or, you know, for money or what have you, and they kidnap them, they tie them up, they blindfold them so they cannot see, they don't know what is happening, and they tie up, you know, all their limbs and their senses. Now, in that position, you would have to be either crazy or very, very foolish to think, now I'm going to enjoy. I'm blinded, I'm tied. Oh, this is now I'm really going to enjoy like that. But that is the position of the material energy, that we lose complete vision of our own self. We can't even see ourselves as a spirit soul. We have no perception. I am a spirit soul. We lose that vision, so we're blindfolded. We can't see our activities. We don't know where we are at that. And our transcendental senses are tied up so that they cannot act at all at that. And in that position, we think, now I am, you know, free to enjoy at this. So, but that position of being chained, bound, gagged, and blindfolded in material existence, the chain of those activities in bondage begins with not controlling the tongue. And the chain of liberation from that situation begins from controlling the tongue. Control the tongue, all the other senses become controlled, the mind becomes controlled, and because controlling the tongue by engaging it in the service of Krishna, praying, you know, you please place me under your spiritual energy, not the bondage and the material energy, then one comes to the Krishna allows one to engage in the transcendental activities. So from the tongue, praying to the Lord, you please give me protection under your spiritual energy, and all our senses become engaged in the service of the Lord. Therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is not trying to attract people with all sorts of magic and jugglery and, you know, tricks and what have you, opulences and all these different things that even, you know, are allurements for the jnanis, the yogis and the karmis. Krishna consciousness is not, you know, trying to trick people like that. It's just saying, you're not the body. You cannot find happiness on the bodily platform of life through any process. Ultimately, you have to give up all those processes and come to the to understand the first instruction of the Bhagavad Gita. You're not that body, and from that point, from that realization, your whole the whole process of spiritual realization and God realization is an expansion. It sits upon that understanding. Without understanding that one is not the body, one cannot make any spiritual progress further than that. But as soon as one understands, I am a spirit soul and not this body, your spiritual realization, your God realization unfolds. And if you're not the body, that means don't try to be happy on the bodily platform. That self-control begins with the tongue. Engage the tongue in the service of the Lord, take prasadam, chant Hare Krishna, and all the other senses in the mind will be completely on the spiritual platform. So I'll just leave it there. If anyone has any 10-second question or comment? Yes?
For this learning, as
yes. What Krishna is doing is the same thing, in that, you know, bhakti is very, very difficult to understand. As I say, even the first instructions on bhakti, that you're a spirit soul upon which the, you know, bhakti process rests upon, is very difficult to understand. So the avatars and Krishna, they go to great lengths that in order for you to understand bhakti, they gradually bring you to that understanding by a comparative, brief look at the other processes. Astanga Yoga offers this, but Bhakti Yoga offers this. So here, Krishna will explain, you know, by Karma Yoga process, you can go to the heavenly planets. So he tells us that. But by comparison, then he says, but think about this. By Bhakti, you can go to my spiritual abode and never have to take another material body again. So, you know, by comparison, you think, go to the heavenly planets, come back, take a material body, birth, death, old age and disease, you know, for many, many millions of, you know, years, or go to the spiritual world and live eternally and never have to take another material body. Like that. So, in this way, but if that comparison is not there, then the obvious choice may not be apparent. Alright, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.